from KTOO in Juneau. I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. National Guard troops landed in Bethel yesterday. They'll be based there as part of the military effort to help villages suffering from the storm damage. More on that story online. Governor Mike Dunleavy was in Nome yesterday to assess the damage caused by a historic September storm that affected hundreds of miles of western Alaska coastline and dozens of communities. During his visit to the Norton Sound region, Dunleavy was able to spend time in Golovin, Elam, and briefly touch down in Koyuk. He says there is no substitute for being here on the ground and seeing the storm impacts with his own eyes.
You have to really come out here to see it, and what I mean by that is you can get reports, but the reports always seem to fall short of what really happened, to the details that you need to have to make sure that things get put back together. So that's why we brought out, once again, General Sachs of the National Guard. He oversees our emergencies, as well as Ryan Anderson, our Department of Transportation Commissioner, because it's a lot of road work, a lot of erosion.
Based on the state of Alaska's assessment, the five communities that were hit the hardest from the recent storm were Golovin, Hooper Bay, Neutok, Nome, and Scammon Bay. The governor was able to visit all of them over the past few days and noted that Golovin's damage stood out to him.
There's a pretty flat spit there, as well as a hill where homes are located. That spit got hit pretty hard. We saw a lot of devastation there. A lot of high water, teacher housing, other housing, buildings, connexes that have were blown across the inlet quite some distance, now located on the other side of the inlet.
Governor Dunleavy returned to Anchorage yesterday evening as a current fall storm prevented him from flying on to Shaktulik as planned. Weather continues to be a factor in the recovery process for Western Alaska, not only today, but in the coming weeks. Dunleavy says there's a limited window of time for recovery as freeze-up is fast approaching.
You got to move fast. We can't let bureaucracy stand in the way, because every day is a day for some folks in a wet house, or every day is a day in which their house is off their foundation, or they can't get to where their boats are because the roads are gone.
On Tuesday, Governor Dunleavy sent a request to the federal government asking for financial assistance through grant programs and for 100% federal share in cost. It's unclear if or when President Joe Biden will issue a major disaster declaration to assist Western Alaska, since simultaneously, Puerto Rico is asking for help to recover from Hurricane Fiona. Countless numbers of Western Alaskans have lost subsistence resources, food, and even property that ties them to the land. While various agencies are still assessing the scope of damage from the storm, residents are processing what this loss means to them and their families. KNOM's Davis Hovey reports.
Melanie Banke, CEO of Kowarik Inc., shared with KNOM listeners on Wednesday that the damage to subsistence cabins goes beyond loss of buildings.
We've got several people who have lost their subsistence cabins and their boats. And we all know that our subsistence cabins aren't just recreational. They're a means for our food security, but also our cultural continuation. And they connect us to the land and our ancestors.
Banke's point about the cultural connection being affected by the storm has been echoed again and again by Western Alaskans. Darlene Trigg is one of many Nome residents who no longer has a camp for her and her family to enjoy. It was completely washed away by the storm.
The camp itself is gone, but you look down and you'll see things, right? Like, we had just remodeled it, and there's a doorknob, it was a homemade door, so whatever it is he used to latch it, it's just sitting right there on the ground. We walked over to where the boats were, but you could see his commercial fishing tag on the ground. It was just right there, right where the boat was.
Some locals still have their family cabins intact, but they have been moved across the Safety Sound or relocated to another spot on the tundra. Others are picking through the debris of what used to be their subsistence camps. Trigg highlights the fact that each of her family members have their own story connected to the land where their subsistence cabin used to be. She says even if locals did not lose a cabin, everyone has been impacted because this is a collective experience.
My mom and dad took it upon themselves to make sure that all of the kids had subsistence foods, and it all happened there. My earliest memories are in that building, around that land. It's a part of the foundation of who I am. It's built into my identity.
During his visit to the Norton Sound earlier this week, Governor Mike Dunleavy witnessed the significant damage done to boats and subsistence gear in the Nome area.
You fly up and down this coast, you have countless fish camps, you have countless cabins, you have countless areas where there's valuable property folks can't get to.
Throughout the Norton Sound region, residents have talked about the impact this storm had on their subsistence lifestyle. Daisy Lockwood Kachiak, the city administrator in Stebbins, told KNOM her community will not have as much food for winter.
100% of the fish racks and fishing supplies for all our subsistence fishermen are gone.
Kachiak estimated that a quarter of the community did not even get to fish and gather subsistence food this summer due to the lack of salmon in the region and the essential work that needed to get done in Stebbins. The community is requesting food deliveries from various agencies to help sustain them over the coming days. As families are pulling together to clean up and repair what's left of their generational cabins, now the question is, will financial assistance from the federal government help rebuild these vitally important subsistence camps and gear? Banky says Kowarik will do its part to make sure those needs are addressed.
We need to be able to convey that these are not just recreational use cabins. These are our means of supporting our families and our communities.
Alaska's congressional delegation has sent a letter to President Joe Biden urging him to approve Governor Dunleavy's request for a major disaster declaration in western Alaska. Reporting in Nome, I'm Davis Hovey.
An unfinished goal of the late Congressman Don Young was to renew the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the primary federal fishing law. U.S. House Natural Resources Committee took up a bill to do that yesterday. Alaska's new Congresswoman, Mary Peltola, wants it to pass to address the salmon crisis in western Alaska, but she's facing strong headwinds. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Peltola wants her colleagues to understand how dire the situation is for families in her home region, where people depend on salmon for food. She told of one Kuskokwim fisherman who usually harvests 2,000 chum salmon a year.
Because he has a dog team and a very large family. So typically, every summer, he would harvest 2,000 chum salmon. Two summers ago, he was only able to harvest 2 chum salmon.
The impact of her anecdote in the hearing room Wednesday was hard to measure. Republicans attended in force to skewer many provisions in the Democratic bill. Some spoke of how important sport fishing is to their families and communities. The bill includes a change Peltola has advocated for, adding 2 seats on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council for Alaska tribal members. Without those seats at the table, she says, the Fisheries Management Council will always be more receptive to the large trawl fleet. They catch salmon by accident. Peltola says this bycatch contributes to the fish crisis facing coastal communities and those upriver.
After 30 years of industrial fishing in the Bering Sea, where they're tossing out metric tons of juvenile crabs, halibut, and salmon, it catches up with us. And then we get to the point where people who depend on hundreds of salmon to fish their family, to feed their families every year, are not able to even catch single-digit numbers of salmon.
Of course I object to this.
That's Republican Congressman Cliff Bentz of Oregon. His state has 1 seat on the North Pacific Council. Bentz says Alaska already has 6 seats. Alaska Native people could be appointed to them. Peltola counters that Alaska Native fishing experts don't often have the resumes that get political appointments. She says 2 of the most valued voices on Kuskokwim fishing were a retired plumber and a retired electrician.
But both of these gentlemen had spent every single summer of their life on the river. They came from a lineage that had a 12,000-year relationship with their fishing sites. Unbroken, 12,000 summers.
Opponents of the bill also say it would crack down on bycatch to the point that no fishery could survive. The primary author of the bill is Representative Jared Huffman, a California Democrat. He says it merely emphasizes the need to minimize bycatch.
Minimize bycatch to the extent current law says practicable. We would change it to possible, but you're still within the context of acknowledging bycatch will always exist.
The At-Sea Processors Association, representing the big players in the Bering Sea pollock fishery, declined an interview request. That industry group and 40 others wrote a letter blasting the bill. If it passes, they warn, the fishing sector will be in chaos. Fisheries will be shut down. The letter says managers and fishermen already go to great lengths to minimize bycatch. Opposition like that has killed prior efforts to pass a Magnuson-Stevens reauthorization. House Resources Chairman Raul Grijalva says he hopes to pass the bill out of committee and get it to the full House soon. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
State health officials are encouraging Alaskans to get updated COVID boosters and flu shots ahead of the flu season. The new bivalent booster, which increases protection against both the Omicron variant and the original coronavirus, has been available for nearly 2 weeks. In a public health presentation yesterday, state epidemiologist Sarah Aho said approximately 8,000 doses have been given so far.
That's not a huge number. We're hoping for lots more in the coming months. And if you compare that to people who've received the primary series in Alaska for the COVID vaccine, that's over 440,000 people.
The State Department of Health is working with tribal organizations and local providers to get boosters and other medical supplies out to rural communities, including those in western Alaska impacted by the storm. Gene Wiseman is the section chief of Rural and Community Health Systems for the state's Division of Public Health.
Airports are in good shape, so with some minor problems in a few areas with lighting and such. So supply movement should be unhindered except for normal Alaskan weather.
Health officials said COVID-related hospitalizations continue to go down in Alaska and across the country. Here in Juneau, some pharmacies and healthcare providers have the new boosters. Local health authorities also plan to host a combined booster and flu shot vaccine clinic at Floyd Dryden Middle School on October 1st. Sign up at juneau.org/vaccine or by calling 907-646-3322. And finally, weather. Local office of the National Weather Service says another atmospheric river event is likely to impact southeast Alaska with rising river levels and substantial rainfall. It's expected to begin Sunday, primarily in the southern half of the panhandle with moderate to heavy rain. Then a significantly stronger event may impact the northern half of the panhandle or northeast Gulf Coast from Monday onward. A plume of moisture could remain over the northern panhandle through much of Wednesday. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Thursday, September 22nd, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.